It's kind of like we expect that from a hip-hop artist at this point. We expect you to be talking about how good you are and how many girls you sleep with and how much dope you sell and all that stuff. That's the sort of thing, like, you know, we expect you to be talking about how awesome you are.
Yeah, how much dope you sell. Greetings, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Sophisticates. I'm Matt Patches, and I'm excited to announce that for the very first time, I am sitting across from one of my Sophisticate cohorts recording live and in person. Ryan Pfister, is this a transcendent experience for you?
I've never felt anything like this before.
You're in my house.
It's quite incredible.
My house or the experience?
Both. This is a pretty transcendent apartment in the presence of such fantastic movie posters, large movie collections, and a fantastic futon, I might add.
Yes, thank you very much. But unfortunately, the third member of our Triforce is still hiding in the underbelly of Boston, Mr. Rajan Mudambi. How's that? How is Boston treating you? It's not my house, but...
Yeah, it's true. And for that, it's, you know, rather disappointing.
Now that we've gotten past the novelty of interacting with each other in person, we might as well move right into today's first topic. Rebecca Black and meta-narcissism.
Rebecca Black, as we all know, started out with her song Friday. And Friday was kind of a silly song that was unintentionally on her part became a big hit. And as a result of that, she then started in with this other song, which is kind of just not really about anything but the fact that she is now famous because of her other song.
Right. She basically parlayed her overnight success via YouTube because she created this, yeah, what you said, silly song about nothing, about partying on Fridays, and it just went viral. And now her second song is this strange lens on the overnight, out-of-nowhere success that she's experienced from producing that song. I'm not stopping for you.
Relatively new phenomenon. Like, I'd be curious to see if older artists, there's no older artist that I'm aware of that has made a song just about being famous, but I feel like pretty much every famous pop artist does it now. I mean, we have Fergie, Kanye West does it all the time.
Writing songs about their success.
Just about being famous. Like, hey, I'm famous.
Well, but why do you think that is? Because that's just, they're writing what they know?
I guess, yeah, they're just... It's maybe fame has become such an overriding thing now. Or people, maybe they think people want to hear more about fame now. They want to, like, have that vicarious fame experience.
But you think Rebecca Black is now borderline narcissism?
I don't think she herself is narcissistic, but I think that they're inducing, like, her handlers have made a video that is all about just how awesome she is.
But isn't that what self-promotion is all about? Isn't that why these people do this? To, like, bring us into the fame fold and give us a taste of what their glitzy lives are all about? Is that narcissism, or is that just a way of roping us in? That's their hook.
I guess I feel like if that's the hook in itself, it's not very compelling. It's like the only thing we're going to see. It's not that she's famous because she's... It's just about being famous for the sake of being famous.
Well, I think a lot of people want to hear that. I don't know if that... So I don't really think it is narcissism. And on another note, I think a lot of this kind of self-glorification, self-promotion that you see in a lot of pop songs now, I think that comes from the fact that hip-hop has become so mainstream and everything. And if you look at a lot of rap songs, a lot of them, there are a bunch of different things that people talk about in rap songs, but one of the things that is frequently talked about is how awesome I am, you know? So, and since so many songs are saying that in the hip-hop genre, that's spreading over into the pop genre as well.
I was going to say, so because of hip-hop, it's now okay to have a song that's just about how great you are, whereas before that was kind of taboo.
I don't think it's taboo. I think it might be less common, or at least less direct. There's a a Jay-Z song where he basically talks about how he's bigger than the Beatles. Who better than me? Only the Beatles, nobody ahead of me. I crushed Elvis in his blue suede shoes, made the Rolling Stones seem sweet as Kool-Aid too. 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001 and beyond. And he's right, technically. Is he tooting his own horn? Absolutely. But does it come off as narcissism?
I think narcissism is totally the wrong word there. I think it's like, because narcissism is like self-love and whatever. This is kind of like, just, I'm awesome and you should know this. Like, or, you know, it. I think it's different.
But how is it different? Different to the person listening to it? If you could somehow describe that feeling of hearing the song and being like, yeah, I guess Jay-Z is awesome. That's what irritates us about narcissism in the first place. So I'm surprised that that doesn't seem to rub you the wrong way in the respects of these songs.
Well, I guess the thing for me is I thought a core element of really being able to bond with an artist was this relatability, being able to say, you know, singing about, like, you know, having a breakup or a relationship or you know, just going to Taco Bell or something. You know, it's just like something that everybody does, and you can say, oh yeah, I've been through that and I can feel that. But if it's fame, you know, pretty much by definition the rest of us can't relate to it unless you're singing just for an audience of other famous people.
But isn't that, I mean, I think they're trying to bring you into it. I think they're trying to make it relatable. Isn't that why we watch, or we might be the wrong word here, but people watch these reality shows on E! And MTV and Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or like, why do people read celebrity news and gossip? I think that's out of trying to vicariously live through these people so that these musicians can write songs about how awesome their lives are and how important they are, and we somehow connect with them because of our lofty dreams or the idea of being in that world when we can't be.
I mean, I guess that's probably a common yearning. I guess I just haven't seen that so often in the past as using music to convey that feeling. I thought it was a big reality television thing.
It's bleeding over.
And in terms of relatability, rock stars have been singing about the rock star lifestyle for, you know, as long as there's been rock and roll. So, and that's not, you know, what the average Joe is doing, you know, like.
It's their emotion, I mean, though, filtered through their lives.
Yeah, that's true. And there is some sort of, it feels somewhat genuine because, you know, that obviously that is their life.
Right.
And
oddly enough, but I know you haven't seen this video, Rajan, but Rebecca Black, her My Moment song, as much as I don't really enjoy it because it's not a very good song, I think she's very genuine as a person. I think she is genuinely blown away by the fact that she, you know, became an overnight success via YouTube, random video, and this song is completely a reaction to that. And I don't think it's narcissism to flaunt it. I think she's just caught up in her moment. But that's where I don't think she crosses over into the narcissistic level of flaunting her fame.
I'd agree. I don't think she falls into complete narcissism here. It just kind of disappointed me after seeing a song Friday that was just completely about something silly that, I mean, I think relatability was a key component there, because we can all commit, you know, relate to trying to, well, I mean, I usually took the bus. I guess I didn't have to figure out which seat to take, but
You're calling Friday relatable?
A little bit, yeah. We all woke up 7 a.m., had to have our bowl, had to have cereal.
Partying.
Yeah.
I think there was a certain level. I mean, I don't think the video was self-aware, but I think people enjoy Friday because it's so absurd. It is as cookie cutter as you could possibly get. Whereas My Moment is so genuine and so like, thank you everybody for making me such a big success, that it's not funny and it's therefore a bad song. Whereas some of these hip-hop songs, Rajan, that you were talking about, they're being so full of themselves that at some point it becomes hilarious and you get behind it.
Yeah, I think there is some aspect to that. But I think also it's kind of like we expect that from a hip-hop artist at this point. We expect you to be talking about how good you are and how many girls you sleep with and how much dope you sell and all that stuff. That's the sort of thing that, like, you know, we expect you to be talking about how awesome you are.
Yeah, how much dope you sell.
And we don't expect that necessarily from, you know, a, however old she is, like, what is she, like, 16 or something?
I am curious how much dope Rebecca Black sells, so if that could be the topic of her next song, I would really appreciate it.
I guess people value this vicarious experience of hearing people talk about fame more than I thought they did.
Yeah, I think people need it in their lives, and they really welcome it, whether they would say so or not. They just like feeling the energy that comes with this life that they don't really live, and amazingly, Rebecca Black does some of that, but I think other people do it better.
And we have genres like hip hop to thank for it. I didn't realize that part either.
Thank you, hip hop,
for bringing us fame,
for giving me insight on dope selling.
I mean, where else? How else would you know?
That's true. I wouldn't know much about the dope sales market without hip hop, apparently. So thank you. On that note, we should move on to our second topic for today. Compassion for big businesses. So this is a topic that was delivered to me late in the evening via email from one of our most avid listeners, my father. So shout out to Rodney Patches. He sent me something that echoed something I had been feeling as well. As you all know, Borders has shut down. It's completely bankrupt, out of business. They tried to get money to keep themselves alive, and they failed. They're gone. And all the Borders stores are closing, never to be seen again. And I know several people who feel sad about this fact. I think, especially for someone like me, growing up in the burbs in the 2000s, that Borders was like a safe haven. One of the three places you could probably go on a Friday evening and chill and not get into too much trouble. And I think a lot of people are like that, and by seeing them close down, it's kind of like, aw, bookshops are closing. Fuck you, Kindle. You know, it's a sad moment. On the other side of it, Borders, when it opened, it caused so many little bookshops to close down. It is a business titan. And for some reason, we feel bad that they crumbled because they couldn't keep up with the market. That is backwards.
So I guess the question is, what do we feel the compassion for? Do we actually feel it for...
We feel it for the store, I think.
For the store itself.
We feel bad to see bookstores close. And bookstores to us are Borders and Barnes & Noble, but they're safe for now.
Well, I think it's an order here. Like, I think we felt bad when the small stores were closing, and now that the big stores are the only one left, that we are the only ones left, we feel bad for them too.
But I mean, they're business juggernauts. Why do we feel bad for them when we so more often than not complain about big business destroying America?
Let me pose a different question. Do you think that this is related to the fact that they're a bookstore, or just because they're a store that closed? Like, how did people feel when Kmart had their troubles and when Sears had their troubles?
Did they have troubles?
Yeah.
Kmart is perpetually in trouble.
Yeah.
Kmart was in trouble the minute they opened. Kmart. It's not a very appealing name.
No, the Blue Light Special was hot for a while.
I think people kind of did feel a little bit bad because they're fixtures of, you know, American consumer.
Sure.
Like, when you go to a store, like, Kmart is like a ubiquitous term. Like, you just like, yeah, Kmart is some place where you go to shop. Or Sears, you know, like, it's a pretty American store, you know?
Right.
And I think people kind of react to the change, like, that's something that they know and something they're used to.
A staple of their life has disappeared.
Exactly. And then when that just kind of, like, threatens to disappear, you know, you react to that sort of thing. And I think that...
But it's not as if what they're losing doesn't exist in some other capacity.
I think the thing that is so interesting about a business closing is that you're not really, it's not a person. There's no person really to feel sad for. You're only feeling sad in like a general, like, is America dying sense, as opposed to, you know, if a person, you know, you actually can feel bad for like a specific person if they lost their life savings.
To be fair, I mean, people work there, so there are individuals impacted by the closing of Borders.
But it doesn't sound like that's who you feel bad for.
No, it's definitely not. You're more worried about where can I go read the latest Calvin and Hobbes reissue while sipping on a Frappuccino. That's what I'm missing from a Borders closing.
I mean, in that sense, I think it's perfectly rational to feel sad or for this business, because you're losing an experience that you could have had. It has nothing to do with the fact of who's providing that service. It could be a small store or big.
The thing is, though, when you went to Borders to read your Calvin and Hobbes and sip a frap, like, you were spending like $4 or something, right?
Yeah, to get my frap. Yeah.
That's a huge store to be getting like $4 return investment out of the people who are going to show up. Like, you might as well just be a Starbucks at that point.
Wait, what do you mean?
I think he's saying that we killed.
Like, I mean, that's the sort of business that's not going to keep them open if that's the only reason people are coming to Borders.
Gotcha. So we killed Borders.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously we did, because, well, okay, they didn't react, but.
Well, I mean, that's you're
absolutely
right.
They didn't react to us.
You're absolutely right. That's confusing, too, because the people who probably feel worst about Borders closing haven't actually been to a Borders in ages. They haven't really bought books from a Borders in a long time. I would venture to guess. I mean, I don't remember the last book I bought at a bookstore.
Yeah, we all just go there to drink coffee. I mean, this is what's kind of interesting about it is I think the experience we value is having a coffee shop with a lot of books in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They need to put coffee shops in libraries, and that is basically creating the same experience as what bookstores were serving to people. I think that, and kind of touched on this in the opening statement, that they were safe havens. They're just a place to hang out for people, and obviously that is not a fruitful business because no one's buying anything. I think people need to kind of wake up from feeling bad and seeing this as a sign of American decline. It's not. It's the evolution of business, and people should be more prepared for that, probably.
Are people feeling like this is a sign of American decline so much as like...
Or American cultural decline. You know, like, oh, it's the death of books.
I think it probably is leaning that way, because...
yeah, the death of books, that's right. You know?
I'm not saying it's the death of, like, literature, but I do think the physical book is on the way out.
Sure, but it's not having an impact on people enjoying books or reading them or consuming them in a safe place, a comfortable place. That is not disappearing. There's just something else about Borders.
Well, I think one of the questions here is we're talking about big business, and do we feel bad about the big business? And I think we've identified here the reason we feel bad about Borders is that we lost a personal experience. We can no longer have this hangout at Borders because it is closed. I think the question is, in terms of compassion for big business, is if we have a business like RJR Nabisco that has gone through a huge decline, do we feel bad that like an American icon has kind of has declined, even though we're not really personally affected by it?
Clearly, I don't feel bad because I have no idea what you were talking about.
Well, they sold cigarettes, and Marlboro kind of took them over.
When did that happen? Back in the when?
I think it was the 80s. Yeah, it was the 80s with the whole. Barbarians at the gate, private equity, leveraged buyouts.
The good old days.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is going to the crux of what you were saying before, that should we feel bad for these big businesses that have gone because they're sort of evil big businesses, but they're still kind of this American icon.
I think people have too much investment in the things they've become familiar with. This is an opportunity for mom-and-pop stores to capitalize on what Borders was giving us, but in a smaller scale. People need to be open to embracing those new things. And for some reason, I bet there are people out there who would feel bad if their local Walmart closed. Oh, Walmart. They're going out of business. Like, they've been around for so long. Like, that day will come, I imagine. And people will feel bad. And I think it's just because they're so familiar with what they have and their routine that they've become attached to these big brands and they can't imagine. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think this is a really good point. I think what we're doing is we're actually, instead of becoming too tied to the experience itself, we're actually tying this experience too closely to the brand providing it.
Yeah.
Like, we can still find, there are still plenty of places to go and drink coffee in the presence of books. And so I think we just have to stop tying this specific brand and just focus on, are there other places we can get that experience?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's avoidable, really, because you're going to have an emotional attachment to things like a good time. And if you have a positive association with the times you've spent at Borders, you're going to feel bad about that because even if you don't care that all the other Borders in the entire country are closing, but the one Borders that you did go to is closing. That particular store is closing. So you might care about that.
Right, but you feel the weight of the bigger problem, too. Farewell, Borders. You had a good run, but in the end, we don't need you anymore.
I mean, do you feel okay having compassion for this big business? I mean, is that more okay with you now?
I'm really trying not to feel that way at all. I'm trying to separate myself from this whole thing and see this as a natural evolution of things and really trying to cut myself off from the nostalgia factor of caring about Borders. I just think it's a waste of time. They put more behind it than what actually exists. You know what? The Kindle is the best thing that ever happened to me. Let's be honest.
Well, I think we've made progress in trying to associate strongly with the experience as opposed to the corporate brand providing it.
Yes, I'm cutting myself off. Good luck, big businesses. I'm all about the experience. Well, we might as well move on to our third and final topic for today. Polo shirts as a symbol for the man.
My friend and I were walking down the street in Williamsburg, in Brooklyn, and we both happened to be wearing polo shirts at this moment. And pretty much nobody else in Williamsburg was wearing a polo shirt. And as you may know, Williamsburg is a big hotbed for hipster culture, for kind of a
whatever that means these days.
Countercultural, you know, pretty much not, you know, trying to rebel a little bit against the man. And it got me thinking, you know, at this moment and in previous ones about how related the polo shirt is to establishment culture. And this was actually hammered home even later in the night when we were out at a bar with a bunch of artsy types. And I think there was only three of us there that worked for corporations. And actually, all of us were wearing polos. You know, the one girl actually stated, you know, oh, I figured you guys also worked for corporation because you're wearing polos.
Diss.
Yeah.
That's a diss.
Is that a diss?
But she's also wearing a polo shirt.
I think she was wearing a polo. Maybe I'm incorrect.
So she felt she was in good hands.
I guess maybe she wasn't wearing a polo shirt. But the point being that I didn't feel like it was a diss so much as just a statement of fact that if you're wearing this polo shirt, you are I guess I thought about it when I originally conceived of this. I thought about it in terms of the Egyptian Revolution. Like, I can't see you walking down the street trying to overthrow the government while wearing a polo shirt. I think you would have to change clothes.
So you actually find that the polo shirt is a symbol for like what, capitalism? For what? What is
no,
it?
No, it's allegiance to the current system.
Really?
I don't think you're trying to bring down the current system.
But where did that sentiment come from?
Is there something about the popped collar? I think it's because it's an unnecessary item. It's this kind of folded down.
Well, I think it's the polo shirt is generally regarded, and I'm coming at this from as a kid wearing a lot of polo shirts because my mother wanted me to look nice and dress nice and be put together in some respects, and the polo shirt kind of forces you to up your dressiness.
Well, I think the polo shirt, I could be wrong about this, but I think where the polo shirt came from, that's mean it's called a polo shirt. You wore it to play polo and to play tennis and to play squash, and like it was like an aristocrat, it was like an elitist, a shirt that the elites wore to play their sports or whatever. So in all of these cases, you know, it's a shirt that the kind of the common blue collar sort of person or if you would not wear, and if you're trying to rebel against that whole, you know, these are the people who are running the system, these are the man who are wearing the shirt, so why, if you're rebelling against that in any way, you know, that's kind of a symbol of them.
Don't they just want to look nice? Can't you look nice while overthrowing the government? Can you look composed? What should they be wearing?
Well, I mean, that principle taken to an extreme is not right, because you can't really wear the flag of necessarily. Well, you would just look really stupid. Like if you were an American, like a soldier in the Union Army, and you just wanted to wear a Confederate flag, you couldn't do that.
True, that wouldn't comply.
You know, and
that would probably not go over well.
Okay, so to a much lesser extent, there's the polo shirt. It's the flag of the system.
But let's look at the other thing. What else is kind of like a symbol of the establishment? Also, is like, you know, a white button-down shirt that you're going to wear to work or whatever? But you can totally wear that, ironically.
You're right. Maybe it's the absence of irony in the polo shirt.
It's too clean-cut.
But why is the polo shirt have no irony?
Because you don't iron them. Oh! Thank you. No, that's what I'm trying to figure out, too. Like, where did they gain this reputation for not having... Are they just the plainest thing that you could possibly wear? You're not showing off any of your emotion through what you're wearing? Why does the polo shirt define you as a person?
I mean, this is a good point. There's not really a space for fashion within the polo shirt. You know, you either are wearing the polo shirt...
Right. You're not wearing a tie with it. You're not...
You can't make it frilly. You know, like there's nothing you can really
do. There are two choices. You either have your collar popped or you don't have it popped. That's basically it.
May I ask a question here? Rajan, you wear polo shirts. Is that correct?
I do.
And you are a popped collar man.
I have been, yes.
I have seen you pop your collar. What is with that?
Well, okay. For me, it's just kind of... I've always done it since I was, like, 10 years old. So... And then when people told me I was supposed to not do it, of course, that meant that I was going to do it even more, you know?
You were rebelling. So rebelling with their polo shirt.
I guess I was rebelling with my polo shirt. I guess I was kind of rebelling against the rebels, if that makes sense.
You're just living the way you want to live.
I mean, in terms of the people I hung out with, you know, like you and I were both members of the kind of... theater and choral sets in high school.
You can just go ahead and call us dorks. Just go ahead.
Well, whatever, but in any case, the people that were in that set were obviously not the people who were trying to... They were probably the people who were going to be these Williamsburg-type people that Pfister experienced, who were none of them wearing polo shirts. And so this is the normal for what I was experiencing in high schools. I was rebelling against that. I guess.
Well, I guess the question here is, does wearing the popped collar make you more or less of a symbol of the man?
I don't think you can let it define you. I think what Rajan's saying is he wanted to pop his collar and wear a polo shirt, and he did, and that's all there is to it. And he's still the same person. He can do whatever he wants. I feel the same way. I wear polo shirts. Now, I will admit that when I'm walking through Brooklyn or something, I suddenly become like the anti-hipster. There is baggage that comes with it. But you can't let it define you, too. Why do you like wearing them? You wear them. But I
think it's because they look nice.
Right. But you wouldn't say that it causes you to be complacent.
I think that it does involve a little bit of, like, I think it involves a level of a statement of comfort about your life.
Like, what is someone wearing that's the opposite? What's the opposite of the polo shirt?
Like a torn up blanket.
A torn up blanket.
Yeah, like a shawl.
Nobody's wearing that.
What, I don't know. What are they wearing in Williamsburg? I guess they're wearing like tight t-shirts and like button downs.
Flannel button downs.
Flannel button downs. Lots of flannel.
I mean, it's just a different look.
If you were really angry at your job and you wanted to quit and go live as a hermit in Africa.
Okay.
When you were having these thoughts and then you had to, like, go out and take a walk to think about it, would you wear a polo?
I don't think I would consciously think about what I was wearing when I was doing
this. I just feel like the irony of it would overwhelm me and I couldn't wear the polo shirt.
At the end of the day, if you think something looks nice, then you should just wear it.
But I think it looks nice because of its relationship to the system.
Oh, is that why?
I think it looks nice because of your relationship to the system.
Wait, how is that different?
You could be part of the quote-unquote man.
I'd like to point out that we are in person together, so I can see the air quotes.
Yes, I'm actually making air quotes. You could be part of the man, but be guided by your own stylistic choices. Whatever you think fits into, like, I could wear bright orange suits every day if I feel like I'm flexing my power in that respect. If I'm like the owner of the biggest bank in the world, I can wear whatever I want and be in control.
It's kind of a different perspective. If you own all the banks, then obviously you don't need to fit in with anything, because what is someone going to say?
So you're saying the lower tiers of the man.
If you're just like a generic white-collar worker in some company, then I think there is sort of more of a need to fit in with the corporate culture.
Well, yeah. You can't just like not care as you would at a higher level.
I want to be a badass and continue to wear polo shirts when I want to.
I think it's difficult to do.
Well, you have to own it.
I think you totally can do it, but you have a little bit of baggage to overcome when you're meeting someone that you don't know. Because when you meet someone that you don't know, you kind of have to prove that, yeah, okay, I'm wearing a polo, but that doesn't define me.
Right. I mean, if we can even take this. I mean, it is a symbol. You know, like we could even take this to the extreme and use something like a swastika. Like you can't wear a swastika because you think that it looks cool. Because
you don't think I could go on a date and wear a swastika and it be kosher?
Probably not.
A kosher special. It's a symbol. You know, you at a minimum you would have to overcome it.
I didn't realize there was so much baggage coming with...
To amend what I said, I think it does apply to polo shirts in general, but it is definitely something that I noticed when I was going around wearing my popped collar polo shirts, where, you know, people have an impression of who you are if you wear a popped collar on a polo shirt, and...
But why didn't you change?
I didn't see any reason to.
I mean, the popped collar is different than the regular polo shirt. I think it takes away some of
the... Right, but both have baggage at the end of the day. And then the question is, do you change based on how you want to live and then how you want to dress?
Well, I think what's interesting here is you seem to think, and I think you are probably right, I'm not sure, does the polo shirt have a kind of good-looking value just because it is a polo shirt, as opposed to deriving that value of you looking good because of its... heritage of...
Oh, you're saying do people think it looks good because of its symbolic value beyond it actually looking good aesthetically?
Yes. I mean, is there an objective kind of aesthetic good-lookingness to the polo?
Yes. It has aesthetic value.
I think it does.
Because you add nothing. It is the boldest thing you can do.
Maybe. I mean, maybe people are just thinking about it because of their... past, you know, because they associate it with tennis and golf and wealth.
I think it's definitely associated with wealth. That's come down through it, and it's not, because it's kind of come through generations, it's maybe not as obvious to us in our first thought, but the connotation is kind of surrounding it.
I guess I should abandon wearing polo shirts then, because I don't want to come off as overly wealthy.
I don't think that's the come away from this. I think... Because I don't think you should just abandon... I'm fundamentally opposed to just abandoning clothes because people think that you shouldn't wear them.
I mean, I think you could take this as an opportunity to really go, like, double irony on it. I'm not part of the man, but I'm wearing a shirt from the man.
Oh, I see. It. I'm a domestic terrorist of fashion by wearing their colors and flying as them, but really I'm looking to bring it down.
I don't think bringing it down is the word we're looking for here, just as opposed to being not part of it.
So my counterculture would involve actually wearing polo shirts in defiance of polo shirts?
In defiance of, like, you're kind of ironically embracing the system.
Mm.
But the problem is that if you already work for corporate America, you probably can't do the double irony because it's...
That's the problem with irony. You slowly slip into reality and you just become that. You start wearing polo shirts because you want to. And I'm sorry if my mom is now in tears that she realizes that she was raising me to wear polo shirts and making me look like a total douchebag in elementary school and middle school. So I'm sorry, Mom.
I don't know. I think maybe our takeaway here is that we need to start focusing on the objective aesthetic value of the shirt as opposed and start to try to take away this establishment.
Well, Rajan's already doing baggage. That. That's what he does.
So let's all join
the... He owns the pop collar in the wake of every fraternity in America. Congrats. Congrats, Rajan.
Bringing it back. It's going to be high school music dork.
Eventually,
territory.
Rajan. Eventually people will understand why you wear polo shirts. Well, that about wraps things up for this episode of The Sophisticates. Ryan, haircut? You're it's not very combed at the moment, since I can see it.
this does add a new dimension to our haircut discussion, I suppose. This is an appropriate angry walk of debate to wear a polo for. Is where they get a haircut.
To match your polo shirt and whatever the man says you should do. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode. You know where to find us. We're on iTunes, thesophisticates.tumblr.com for all greatness and goodness. We're on Twitter at Sophisticast, and I think that's everything. So until next week, remember, this is your moment.